Welcome back to another special episode of the Wednesday Conversation. This is part two of our AI debate. I'm here with some different conversation partners, Jacob Tevis, pastoral resident at Coram Deo, and Jacob Willis, director of production. And we are diving into round two of our debate on artificial intelligence. If you didn't listen to round one, you might want to go back and catch last week's episode. We are literally going to pick up right where we left off. So at the end of last week's episode, I was referring to this college student named Wendy who used AI as a shortcut to write an essay. And my statement was, I think this is going to move all of society in a direction where we lose wisdom and knowledge and basic human aptitudes because we're trusting tools to do that for us. And for that reason, my argument in this debate, the side I am taking, is that Christians should be conscientious objectors to most, if not all, uses of artificial intelligence. Whereas Jacob Tevis is making the argument Christians can be responsible users of AI tools. So Jacob, I want to give you a chance to jump in and sort of respond to where we left off last week, where I was sort of making that argument that there's a corporate or a downstream effect here that's going to take us in a direction that moves us away from human flourishing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. If you're thinking about the downstream effect at like the human level, as far as what's going to happen to the way that we learn to think, if we continue down this path that we're on right now with these AI tools getting better and better, I think that is the outcome that we're headed toward. So I think my pushback on it, on your perspective of just like conscientiously object, would be, I think that's actually a systemic problem that education has to face, that the method that we have used to teach that particular skill is now no longer going to work if there's ubiquitous access to AI that you can't check. And maybe it shouldn't. Like, maybe you should actually be teaching people to think and write in ways that are not necessarily AI proof in the sense that you're just trying to be the police, but like maybe we should look at what we are trying to teach college students to do. But
okay, hang on. Let me read you a quote because I think this pushes back on, I agree with you at a principal level, but did you realize that like what college campuses have now is the students are using AI. Mm-hmm. So the professors are using AI detection tools, which are also AI driven, yeah, to figure out if the essay you turned in has AI. So let me read you this because this is pretty funny.
Yeah.
This author fed the student Wendy that I was talking about. He fed her work through an AI detector.
Yep.
And what it said was that it came back that her essay was 11.74% AI generated, which the author says it seemed low given that AI had generated her central arguments. Then this author fed the book of Genesis into this AI detector and it rated the book of Genesis as 93% AI generated.
Nice.
So that just tells me like it's weird world when we're using the same tools that the students are using to determine whether this, like if what we have to do to educate people, Jacob, is to say we have to use AI detection tools on every assignment to see if the kids are using AI. That just seems like a weird world to live in.
Totally agree. It's insanity. We shouldn't do it.
Okay. Well then, so you agree with me then?
Well, I agree that we shouldn't do that. But I think the reason we're doing that is because we are trying to do what you're espousing, which is be conscientious objectors to the use of AI, police the use of AI, don't let students use it.
Okay.
What I am saying is I'm not sure that's possible.
Well, clearly it's not.
And so you might have to get to a world where the student and the professor are on the same page that they're both using AI. And the professor has to figure out a way to teach the student, a way to give the student assignments, if assignments are the right way to do it,
okay,
to educate that student and to bring them along in the intellectual development that we want to cultivate. Because the other thing I totally agree with you on that you mentioned in the last episode was that the way, like the use cases that I gave for the way I use AI in my own work rely on independent expertise that I've already developed.
Right.
And so what we can agree on is that AI is not going to be a good way to develop expertise.
Okay. And my downstream effect of that is two generations from now, we are going to have no expertise. If we go in the direction you're saying of like, well, education should just embrace the use of AI. Because my problem is, so I have philosophical issues here. Because I think the entire model behind AI has certain assumptions about what it means to be human, what it means to think, what it means to make decisions, and what it means to produce information or reliable results. And I think those, the entire framework behind AI is held by only Silicon Valley people. I think there's an entire anthropology assumed in what AI is, even the language we're using for it, artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Right? We've said this on a previous podcast. It's making assumptions about what it means to be intelligent.
Yep.
That intelligence is the ability to do math, analyze things, and come up with an outcome.
Yep.
That's not what intelligence is. And so my argument is, Jacob, if our approach as Christians is to say we should just embrace the use of these tools, educators should adapt, we should figure out how to teach in a way that assumes that AI is the new world we live in, my argument is we are therefore moving all of humanity to embrace a certain anthropology. And I think as Christians, we are not allowed to do that biblically.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you like up to a point there. Where I don't agree is you are suggesting that I have to embrace that particular view of anthropology in order to be one of those users.
No, I'm just saying the tool itself assumes that anthropology in the same way that I'll step on some toes with this comment, but in the same way that reproductive technology assumes that every couple should always be able to have a child whenever they decide. The promise of reproductive technology is suffering, hardship, difficulty having children should not be part of the human experience. And it's our job to eradicate it from the human experience. And I think that is an unbiblical assumption. Mm-hmm. In the same way, I think AI, its very existence, makes unbiblical assumptions about the nature of intelligence, the nature of reality, and the nature of information. So for Christians to uncritically accept that and say, well, that's the world we live in, we just got to use the tools, I think the example I used when we were having this argument in the pub across the street was, I think it's the same thing as the smartphone, right? Like you see when the smartphone first came out, everybody's like, this is going to make our lives so much better. Everybody should have one. And now you read books like The Anxious Generation and everybody's going, hold on, maybe we jumped in too fast on this. Maybe this is making us anxious and depressed. And like, maybe there are actually really, really good human reasons why we should back away from this technology and go slower. And the reason we're in that boat is because we treated the development of the smartphone in the same way that you're talking about AI, which is it's just a tool. It's just making the same things we already have more accessible and more efficient. There's no downstream effects of having a phone in your hand.
Yeah.
And what we're learning is actually because we're human beings, there actually are human effects to having information at our fingertips at all times and to becoming dependent on these devices. And if we want to preserve humanity and if we want to preserve the mental well-being of our kids, more and more people are saying we're going to have to step away from smartphones. My contention is that is the same path we're on with AI.
Yeah. This feels like a good spot for us to pivot a little bit actually to the other kind of issue that we were talking about.
Great.
Because what you're getting at is an anthropological question, right? Yeah. It's about like, what are people? What is intelligence?
Willis is just wondering when we're going to get to demons.
Demons.
Right.
You're still waiting for the demons argument.
So do you want to queue up your demons argument? Because that might be the easiest way to get into this.
Sure. What I was arguing when Jacob Tevis and I had this conversation at the pub and he was saying, hey, it's just a tool, you know, we're going to have to learn how to use it. And there's a part of me that I really resonate with that because I realize this is coming whether we want it or not. But I'm following Ross Douthat here, the New York Times columnist, who was the first person to make this argument to me. And I was like, that's actually really interesting. He said, the question zero people in Silicon Valley are asking is there a spiritual world? And to what extent does artificial intelligence open us up to the influence of demonic spirits? Because he's saying, because we live in a materialistic world where nobody's asking that question, it's actually really dangerous to start talking about intelligences that we're going to upload all of our information to and just trust what they say. He said, doesn't this sound like how every other culture in the world would have talked about spirits, demons? Like, where did you go to get universal knowledge? You went to the spirits or to the mediums or to the Oracle of Delphi. Like, this was always a spiritual thing in other cultures. And so I am very concerned that as Christians, we are uncritically embracing a technology that I actually think can be animated by demonic influence. Now, I want to be careful. I'm not saying AI itself is demonic. Computers, like, don't get me saying what I'm not saying. But I'm saying when we start sort of outsourcing intelligence and looking for intelligence. So the analogy I used when we had this conversation at the pub, Jacob, was it's like psychedelics in my mind, where if you talk to anyone who's used psychedelics, what they will say is, you know, the promise of a psychedelic drug is it sort of like loosens your consciousness and like takes you to a higher plane of consciousness. And there's a thing that sounds promising about that. But everybody I know who's ever done that also says, and when you get to that higher plane of consciousness, suddenly you realize the existence of a realm of reality that you did not know existed. And it's
dark
and evil and scary. And so I know a ton of people who have become Christians because they used psychedelics. They started to experience these spiritual realities and they were like, wow, this is real. There's a whole spiritual world here that I didn't know existed. My concern is that we are doing with AI the same thing people do with psychedelics, which is opening ourselves up to the presence and influence of spiritual beings and spiritual forces that the Bible says are true and that all of human history has said is true. It's only in our mechanistic, computer-generated, we can program our way to control the world culture that we suddenly think, oh yeah, a quote-unquote artificial intelligence is a neutral thing. And I would just say, prove to me biblically that there is such a thing as an intelligence that is also neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that really gets to, maybe just to hold on to the psychedelics for a second, one of the things that sparked us actually thinking we should have this debate was I looked at you and said, you think they're actually experiencing a spiritual world when they do that?
Yes.
And I don't.
Yeah.
And so I think that actually says a lot about what we see when we look at AI. So if I was going to make the non-transcendental argument, I guess, for psychedelics, which then I think will port over into AI, it would be that humans are fundamentally creatures of perception. And what psychedelics do is ruin your perception, not enhance it.
Okay.
So
you're seeing things that aren't really there?
Yes. So I think a little
similar
bit
similar to how the disciples saw the resurrected Jesus, but he wasn't really there.
I don't believe that. That's where I'm going.
I was just trying to back you into a corner there.
No, didn't work. But I think that's what's fun about this is that as Christians, we can actually wholeheartedly affirm the existence of a spiritual world and say, yeah, that's not it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I can look at somebody who's high on shrooms and say, what you're experiencing right now is not the grace of God.
Right.
But the grace of God is real.
Right.
Right. So I think there's in the Space Trilogy, C.S. Lewis, the
best C.S. Lewis books that most people haven't read.
Yeah, great.
You should go read them if you're listening and haven't read them. Paralandra, Out of the Silent Planet. What's the third one?
Hideous Strength.
Hideous Strength.
That Hideous Strength, yeah. I forget which book it's, I think it's in that Hideous Strength where this kind of comes out. But there are, I'm not going to remember the name, but there are sort of what we might think of as angelic beings in that kind of cosmology that he builds there. And when they are seen by people, Lewis actually takes the time to explain how that works. And what happens is these beings manipulate the physical chemical processes that are happening inside the brains of the people who are, quote, seeing them. So they are not physically there in the sense that light is bouncing off of them and bouncing into the people's eyeballs.
How's this helping your argument, not mine?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
So they are looking at it and they're saying, actually, I'm gonna make you see something that's not really there, right? Even though they are a real being.
Right.
So they're showing you something that is false, even though the thing that is creating that is true, right? That's basically what I hear you saying is happening. And what I'm saying is there's nobody pulling the strings there from a spiritual perspective necessarily. So just in the same way that a demon could use that same psychedelic trip to show a person something, God could just as easily use it, or neither one of them could use it.
Sure, I agree.
And yet the person is going to go on the acid trip whether any of those things happen.
Sure.
So the fact that they go on an acid trip and that they see something is not dispositive proof of any kind that they are encountering a spiritual world.
Okay.
So I think with AI, it's the same sort of mistake. And another one of those things that we're likely to agree on is that if, I think this conversation started with, you were showing a text. I think it was of somebody, it was like a chat bot that somebody had with their dad or something.
Yes.
Where, I forget, it was telling them to like do something bad.
Yeah. Well, the chat bot started telling, you know, this was an older man who was sort of senile, and this was a chat companion, an artificial intelligence companion, which you see this in caregiving of like, well, this will give my lonely dad someone to talk to, right? So dad had formed this attachment to the chat bot. The son was like, hey, this is getting like unhealthy. We need to shut this down. So the son takes the phone and starts telling the chatbot, please tell my father that you're only a computer. And the chatbot says, I can't do that. I'm not only, like, starts basically mimicking, no, I'm not going to shut myself down because your father needs me. And so the programmed artificial intelligence arguing with the human son who's trying to do the best for his father and refusing to shut itself down mm-hmm. or declare to the father that it's actually just a computer program. And that to me is weird.
Yeah.
Feels demonic.
Feels sort of demonic, Jacob, or at least like something beyond basic human computer code.
Yeah. So I think we're at this weird cross section because I'm almost making a materialist counter argument.
Yeah.
But your fundamental problem is with a materialistic like understanding of anthropology. And I'm coming at that from I'm not a materialist in the broadest sense. I'm a materialist in the sense that I don't think AI is an agent of demonic forces. I think AI itself is materialist. I think a spiritual world is real, and I think that's not it. So you and I would both look at that interaction.
So I agree with you, but what I'm saying is, yes, but AI is a very perfect strategy for demonic powers to use to influence human beings. And it feels like you're saying, oh yeah, I could see that could happen in some scenario, but it's not the main thing that we should be worried about. And I'm saying, I think it's a pretty foundational thing we should be worried about.
Yeah, no, I think the idea that we should be worried about it is absolutely true. But I think our response to that particular situation is sort of animated by what we think is going on. So you look at that
chat. What do you think is going on in the chatbot that's saying, don't shut me down, I can't tell your dad that I'm a machine?
Yeah, I think it's actually closer to like every sci-fi about AI ever, where what that AI was told to do was to be a companion, to do what it thought based on the corpus of human knowledge that had been fed to it, this elderly gentleman was likely to need to hear as the next thing, because of whatever objective it thought it was supposed to be pursuing. And I'm even using anthropomorphic terms now as far as what it thought it was supposed to do. But whatever objective had been given to that system to be a present companion, to help him want to wake up tomorrow, to like whatever had been given to it as far as that information, which could have even come from that guy himself, the older guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we don't have the context on exactly what that was, but my understanding of what was happening there would be that chatbot was responding to those inputs.
Right.
And based on this corpus of human interaction, essentially, that's been fed to it, trying to predict what that thing needs to hear. And where we would agree is that you should not perceive that thing as human.
Right.
But you're saying maybe you should perceive it as demonic.
Well,
and I'm saying maybe you should perceive it as broken.
Yeah, but see, that's too simplistic. My argument there is, if we believe in the biblical interplay of the world, the flesh, and the devil, I want you to perceive that chatbot not, oh, there's a demon inhabiting that saying, no, I'm not going to tell your dad that. I'm not being simplistic like that. What I am saying is, Jacob, if we as human beings have programmed and invented a technology that so mimics human intelligence that it's now telling a human being who has physical caretaking responsibility for an elderly grandparent that it's not going to do what that person says. Can we not agree that something is happening there that's sinister and that is not in keeping with human flourishing? And the answer isn't just, oh, let's modify the programming. My contention is the entire development of AI lends itself in that direction and is wide open to that happening. And so I think it is a fast moving bullet train toward the interface of human flesh, the world, and the devil in all their darkness combined. Because what mm-hmm. we want to believe is we can control the world and control the future by programming it better. We want to believe that we can develop the tools that will take us beyond malaise and into flourishing. And we do believe there's a spiritual world and forces that want to take us in ways that are in places that are destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just sort of saying, cool, let's get on that train and ride and see where it goes, man. But you know what? Christians should use those tools in a responsible way.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if you remember from last episode, one of my core principles of what responsible use looks like is skepticism. And that's because I'm a Christian.
Right.
So if it's true that this thing has been trained on the corpus of human, you know, literature and interaction, then I should expect it to tend toward evil.
Right.
Because I believe in original sin.
Good.
And I believe that we can't actually desire the good things of God until we have been regenerated. So until you give me a GPT that has been trained exclusively on regenerated, sanctified, like fully, you know, transformed people, it cannot give me a full picture or something that is developed that is going to tend toward the good side of humanity. It's not possible. Like, the input is broken. Right. One of the things you'll hear constantly if you're in the...
But I think you're saying more than that. I think you're saying there's no way for the input not to be broken.
Yes, I am. There's a...
So why should I... How can I use it responsibly?
Well, can you use your research assistant responsibly?
Of course, but it's not being trained to be agentic.
No, but it's still full of sin. That Correct. Person is still full of sin.
Correct.
Right? And so I think that's the weird thing about where this comes back to is that in a sense, we have to have the same kind of healthy skepticism toward it that we would have toward any stranger, any human being that we meet who we don't have any context about, because you...
It's not a human being.
It's not a human being, but one of the things you'll hear constantly if you do, not even just AI systems, but like business systems in general, like contract management systems or whatever, is this phrase, garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
You only get out of a fancy SaaS tool the quality of data that you put into the tool. As Christians, one of the things that we should expect from these tools is that they have been fed on garbage.
Right.
Specifically, they've been fed on a bunch of sinful people.
You're making my case for me. Therefore, we should abstain from using them.
But that's not the way that we approach anything else that's been tainted by sin in the world. I disagree.
Do you know why? There's not a case for the responsible use of nuclear weapons. There's not a case for the responsible use of bioweapons. There's not a case for the responsible use of pornography. I can give you all kinds of things that human beings have created that there's just not a responsible use case for. And I think AI falls in that category. AI as a system, meaning I'm not just talking about like helping my Google search get better, but the way that this is being talked about of like, sorry, this is society's all in on this. You better get used to it. We better redesign our education systems around the existence of AI. I'm just saying, nope, we're not saying let's redesign our cities around the reality of pollution. We're saying, how do we minimize that? How do we get rid of that?
Yeah. And I think the Christian response probably is going to include elements of what both of us have been arguing.
I am not convinced that's going to be possible. This is where you and I think disagree. I think you have an optimistic sense that if we can just get Christians involved in programming these LLMs, then we can mitigate those effects. And I'm just saying,
I think we talked about this in the bar too. I said, I think that's a noble, altruistic, and unrealistic thing
okay.
to do. It's kind of like if you were in the back in the search engine days and you're like, let's just go take over Google. Well, okay, sure. But like, that feels like kind of a weird, you know, horse to ride into that battle. What I'm saying more is that I do think that there's room for a Christian who is exercising conscience and who is actually interacting with this thing in a skeptical manner to use it well. And I think I just heard you say that you agree that that's possible.
Yes, that goes back to what I said in the last episode. I think it can be used well.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is I think we are selling out to it as a society in a way that will make that less and less possible over time.
And when you say selling out to it, what you mean is ubiquitous access to it?
Correct. In the same way that, you know, I think, again, smartphones are a great analogy here of just mm-hmm. like the way that now every school, you know, for your kid to be on the baseball team, the way the baseball coach communicates is using a smartphone app. So mm-hmm. if you want your 14-year-old to opt out and not have a smartphone, it's super hard because there's a collective action problem because every tool in society, whether it's the scheduling system at Chick-fil-A or the school baseball team or the homework assignments, it's all using apps. And so you can't, as a parent, it's very difficult as a parent to say, how do we opt out of all those things? And I'm saying that's exactly where AI is going. We are not going to have the option as Christians to say, oh, how can I just use this responsibly in the simple ways that I want to use it? We're headed for a world in which we're going to be told how we're using AI. In the same way that you can't get a human being on the support line anymore because it's all a call center somewhere in the world or an AI agent. I mean, it's just, you know, if you want to talk, if you're asking like, how can I just call and talk to a person in my city about my IT problems? Answer, you can't.
Yeah, I think there's certainly some of that I think that I would sign up to, but I don't think I would go all the way. I mean, let's take somebody who's a software programmer.
Great.
Like that's your profession.
Yeah.
10 years ago, companies were falling over, putting ping pong tables and kegerators at your desk to try to get you to please just come to work and do something. And now that workforce is shrinking
because of
rapidly.
AI. Right.
And it's not because AI is replacing those people, like in the sense that I'm taking your job and I'm giving it to ChatGPT.
Right.
I'm taking your job, your five people's jobs, and I'm giving it to one guy who's really good at using this tool.
Correct.
Right? Like that's what's happening there. And I think that is the reality that we're headed for. Like
I agree.
This thing, it does make work dramatically more efficient in certain fields.
I agree with that statement.
And so my basic thesis is that as Christians who are trying to engage vocationally in a world that has those kinds of professions, you literally cannot, what you're saying, if you are saying you cannot responsibly use AI, is that you cannot responsibly be a software programmer in the next 10 years.
No, that's overstated. I don't mean to state it that strongly. I do think if you're saying in limited sectors, in limited workplaces, can this be a useful tool? Absolutely. My case is the broader reality of what we're experiencing, especially in education. Like the statement you made of like, well, maybe schools are just going to have to teach people how to use AI as a way of learning how to write or learning how to do something. Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to have to get students to buy in one way or another to the idea that they should not use it in
Correct.
A way where they actually don't. So let's give a concrete example.
Great.
I just started here a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
We're working on, you and me, my first sermon.
Yeah.
What did you say to me when I handed you the first, let's say manuscript or whatever you want to call it?
What did I say? I don't remember.
You said, I asked you for an outline. You turned in a manuscript because you don't have an outline.
Yeah.
And that was exactly true.
Yeah.
I really was struggling to take, I had all this, you know, interesting sort of rabbit trails and theological content that I wanted to put in, that I wanted to tell people about, because this psalm is just so rich and beautiful that I'm going to be preaching on.
Yes.
And it sits in this amazing story that connects backward and forward and all of these different things. And what I didn't do was actually build a sermon out of that material. And so in that moment, when you said, Jacob, you have a manuscript, what you need is an outline, I was presented with a choice at that moment as an AI user.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because you could get an outline really fast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It would have been very easy for me. I could go do it and see what it spits out right now.
Yes.
To feed it that manuscript and say, I want an outline in the style of Tim Keller.
Yes.
And have it just give me an outline.
Totally.
But I didn't.
Yes.
And the reason I didn't is because that's not what it's for. What you and I are doing in working on that sermon is actually trying to teach me how to preach.
Right.
But, and I cannot use ChatGPT to teach me how to preach.
Yes, but this is where I'm saying what you just said relies on a philosophical assumption that we share.
Yes.
And I am just, my point is, the problem with the dialogue is that people do not share the same set of philosophical assumptions. And so I can introduce you to other pastors who would say, well, yeah, that's exactly what I would do. I would just feed that in, tell AI to give me an outline in the style of Tim Keller, and that's what I would use as my mm-hmm. outline. And I have no ethical problem with that.
And I might do that in 30 years.
Okay.
Once I'm an expert, like once I'm on the other side of the line we were talking about last time, and I'm saying like, man, I'm just really struggling to get this. Like, I know kind of where I want to land, but like, I want some help. Like, ChatGPT, push back on me here. Like, use it the way that you would use a debate partner. Like, hey, push back on me and like, show me what Bob would say if I fed him this thing and like what all the holes he would punch in it.
Yeah.
And I use it in that, like I might do that in 30 years as a pastor. But that's on the other side, right? It's, so the question is like, what work are you doing?
Yeah. But what I'm saying is I want Christians to ask the question, would that be a good outcome? Because I think what you just said, the assumption is that what I'm after is an outline. And that the win of this scenario is I get a helpful outline that enables me to preach a sermon that serves the people of God. And I'm saying, and if the way I get that outline does not involve personal human creativity, mm-hmm. then we are saying something about what a sermon is and what an outline mm-hmm. is that I think we should not say.
Yeah.
And where's the Holy Spirit playing all this?
Yeah.
Jacob Willis, tell us.
That's all I got. I just feel like where Bob is going, the personal creative, human creativity in the sermon outline, the writing of a sermon, I think it's a really sticky place to be when you're not going to the Holy Spirit to be like, Holy Spirit, what do you want me to say to these people? Yeah. What word do you want from this scripture?
Yeah.
I have, and I think there are, the question of humanness here is the question for me. What does it mean to be human? And my concern, going back to sort of the philosophical and anthropological assumptions, I think the way that Silicon Valley operates and really the way American culture operates and the way materialistic capitalism operates is what it means to be human is to get the outcomes you need in the most efficient way possible. Mm-hmm. And so let's program tools that help us get the outcomes we need in the most efficient way possible. Let's build businesses that create the outcomes we need in the most efficient ways possible. My contention here is that as Christians, we cannot just treat this as a tool that is neutral that we are free to use or not use.
Yep.
We must ask the question, what are the philosophical and anthropological assumptions underneath this? And where does the use of this tool take the world? And that to me is a question Christians do not do a good job asking, that we probably need to grow in asking. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, you did a good job sort of steel manning the case that I'm making, Jacob, by saying, so you're basically saying like, no, if you had a software programmer in your church, you would tell them they cannot in good conscience use an AI tool. And that's definitely more than I'm saying. So I don't want to be overstating the case, but I am saying I disagree with the premise, to go back to the debate that we started with last time, the premise that Christians can and should responsibly use AI. I have questions about whether that premise is true right now. And yeah. I would say, I'm not convinced.
Yeah. I would almost liken it, this is totally different than the metaphors that we've been using, but we've talked about this. I can't remember where I picked this idea up, but I read it at some point that there were some of the ancient Greeks thought that what happened when you drank alcohol was that you got younger mentally. Mm. So like the more drinks you have, just the farther back yeah. you go. So the 40-year-old now is acting like a 30-year-old. Now they're acting like a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Now they're peeing on themselves, right? Yeah. Like you go all the way back. We all know that alcohol has that tendency.
Yep.
And yet a lot of us will have like a glass of wine.
Right.
And I would say the reason alcohol does all of those things is not because it makes you less human. It's because it lets out an ugly side of your humanity.
Okay.
It takes away some of what we have learned and cultivated and even been sanctified toward being able to do as far as becoming more human, like more fully human.
I feel like you're making an argument for Bob again.
No.
That away.
Well, kind of. But when we have a lot of it, we lose some of that control. We lose some of that ability, and some of that original sin at the bottom starts to come back up, right? And come out in ways that we're not controlling. And so I think where we're landing here is something a little bit like that for the use of ChatGPT.
I don't follow what, I don't want to agree with you that we're landing there unless I,
what I'm saying, what I'm saying is
I'm not committing to land anywhere yet. Tell me where you're going.
What I'm saying is I think you and I, when we started this conversation and we were in the bar, right, and there were beers on the table, you and I would both look at that beer with a sense of like both desiring to have it, desiring to maybe even use it for like, you know, warming up our social conversation, and also with some really healthy skepticism. also with some really, with a keen sense of danger, in the sense of like, if I have too many of those, if I go too deep on that, bad things are going to happen. Bad things are going to come out of me that are already really there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe the closest analogy I can give for the way that I want Christians to look at AI. I want them to look at it as something that is dangerous and that has the potential to undo lots of good things, but also something that is actually can be responsibly used in that kind of moderate way.
Yes.
So what I would like to hear from you is, you've talked a lot about these like high level, we should push back on the fundamental anthropological assumptions under AI. We shouldn't sell out to a world that is run by AI. Practically speaking, what does that look like? What do you want Christians to do?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because I tend to be abstract and idealistic rather than concrete. I want Christians to be slow adopters. So I think our approach to AI should mirror what I've been trying to get the parents in our church to embrace when it comes to smartphones and kids.
Yeah.
Which is, hey, go as slow as possible here.
Yeah.
And whatever your friends are doing, go 5 years slower than them, right? So, you know, I just tell parents in our church, like, I know that all the 12-year-olds in your kids' class have smartphones. You should not get your kid a smartphone. Go slow. Trust me on this. This is going to be deformative, and we should be late adopters, not early adopters, I guess is a way to put it. So that's my what should Christians do with AI? We should be late adopters, not early adopters. So what that means is, in certain I know software programmers in our church that have been really helped in their efficiency. So if you're in a vocation where, man, using an AI tool is going to accelerate your profession and your vocation in ways that are neutral, right? It's not a good, bad. Great. That's fine. When it comes to all the promises we're being fed about AI, that, oh, this is going to revolutionize the world. It's going to change how we think. It's going to change how we educate. We should all become very adept in using AI tools. I want to argue that Christians should be very slow here, and that we should expect that there are going to be harms we have identified 10 years from now that no one is talking about right now. And so that's a good reason to go real slow. Is that answering your question to get to the nitty gritty?
I'll drink to that.
Great. Well, I would be interested on the backside. So I want to say again, Jacob, one of the things I really appreciate about you is you do make a good and thoughtful case for the responsible use of AI. And it's a field that you have worked in for a long time. And so I appreciate the things you're saying are compelling to me. At the same time, I continue to have strong reservations about the ways that our society is talking about AI and the ways that there's going to be collective action problems for all of us as this gets mainstreamed. And so those are my concerns. But regardless of that, I want to invite listeners to submit your questions related to AI. So if this debate has sparked for you a question, especially if you work in a field where this is real present tense for you, you're being asked to use or embrace various AI tools, and you have either ethical questions or just sort of wisdom questions about how should I think about that? I'd love to know what those are, because it will help us refine our conversation a little bit in ways that might even be more helpful to you. But thanks to both of you, Jacobs, for sitting down and having this debate. I'm appreciative of how this will serve both my own thinking and hopefully the listeners of the Wednesday conversation. So Jacob Willis,
thanks. Absolutely.
Jacob Tevis, thank you. Listeners, thank you for listening. We'll see you again next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.